Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Renee.
Hi guys, my name is Renee. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Renee.
All right. All right. I made a couple notes for myself because I'm a compulsive person, and I'm in recovery for that today. I guess I just want to start first by saying welcome to the newcomers and the chip takers and the hug takers. Any birthdays that are out there, my experience has been this program that you just keep coming back and really good stuff starts to happen, and it's kind of magical. I'm going to do my best to try to track what it was like for me, what happened, and what it's like today, but honestly, I think like the big things that were really at work here was this thing about a strange force or power bigger than myself that I really don't understand, but just becoming honest about my powerlessness was a big step. Becoming open-minded enough to consider the possibility that something bigger than me might be able to do a better job than I was doing, and being willing to turn all of my big ideas and thoughts over to something that had my best interest at heart, something that I came to define as God as I understand God, or what I call God as I don't understand God. My heart is racing. This microphone is freaking me out. I'm going to say that. I was talking with a fellow before the meeting and was just laughing because it's like, it's just ego, right? It's just ego. I want you guys to think that I'm like smart, and I want you guys to think that I have something to say, and like I know something, and aren't I great? And that's not what this is about. It's so nice. In this area of life, that's not what this is about. It's nice to kind of come into a place and it's like we are people who otherwise would not meet, but we come together with what we have in common, which is we are trying to live. We're like people who are surviving after a shipwreck. And I'm so grateful that I got to hit bottom in my life. I want to say that out loud. Like, hitting bottom was a good thing for me. Life got better after I got to smack the earth. And after I got to live in darkness, I got to appreciate like what it feels like to live in light again. And I've been living in abstinence and restoring my light, I don't know how else to put it, for the last 8 years, and I'm so, so grateful to Overeaters Anonymous for helping me with that. Well, I came in 8 years ago. Let's start there. Actually, 8 years ago, almost to the day, my bottom was Thanksgiving 8 years ago. It was sort of like I had been like prepping to maybe think about coming into OA for about 2 years because things were just getting worse and worse and worse. But I am a stubborn person. Oh, by the way, they say no swearing. So my every word in my head is like the F word. And I'm like, don't say that. Don't say that. So if I pause for a minute, that's what's happening. First three choices are no. So, you know, I came in 8 years ago kicking and screaming. I did not want to think that I was like those people, you people. You're the ones with the problem. It didn't occur to me until I was really finally in here that actually you were the people with trying to find a solution. That the problem, if I wanted to stay in the problem, I could easily do that out there. It's everywhere. Every bit of my teaching, every bit of my history, every bit of my ancestry, it's all perfectly designed to make me nuts with this exact issue, and that was great for as long as that worked, and if I wanted to get better, I came in here. But that was a real reframe because I really thought that you guys had the problem and that all I needed to do was lose some weight and I'd be fine. So I didn't come in with a lot of insight, which was humbling because I tend to think of myself as a bright person and an insightful person, and I did not get it when it came to this stuff. Which was probably good. I think I would say that. The fact that I didn't get it was, I think, probably the first step in humbling me because I was so wrapped up in my ego. This was, for me, this is a real disease of ego. I mean, that's what it comes down to for me. what you think of me or what I think you might think of me or what others are thinking about what you think of me, it all comes back to me. And that's what I care about. And I got so twisted and warped because of that. And it showed up in food, it showed up in body, it showed up in diet and exercise, it showed up in basically every area of my life, way beyond just eating and exercising. I mean, it showed up in my friendships, it showed up in my relationships with other people and in my work. It got to the point with this disease that I couldn't leave the house because I was so, I mean, what was I going to wear? This didn't fit or that wasn't going to thing, and I couldn't leave the house. Like, there was nothing else going on in the world except for my vanity. And this is a disease you just die really slowly from, and that sucks. Because I think if I were to spend a night binging on booze, I'd probably get in a car and I'd probably kill myself or somebody else. And in this disease, I might spend a night binging on food or self-hatred or whatever else is going on. And then what I do is I just sit there in isolation and start to just rot inside. And my spirit just rots and darkens little by little. And it just takes so long to die from this disease. And that really pisses me off. Because I think some people get off a little easier. And I got to live with it for, 26 or 27 years. And it was horrible. I'm so grateful I found these rooms. Because when I got in here, it's like, I don't know how I felt when I got in here, because I was really numbed out. Honestly, I was totally numbed out. I didn't know what my story was. I wasn't relating to anybody. I didn't really get what was going on and all this I didn't really get what was going on, and I just was suddenly like a little bit at peace, just thinking, those people are doing okay. So I guess I'll keep coming back. And that was a good enough reason to keep coming back. And that let my ego kind of calm down, that like I could let go of control or understanding or mastery. There was no chance I was going to be masterful at this. I learned that right away. And I could just sort of like let things happen. And that was, I think, also the beginning of like my spiritual awakening, was like I could let things happen as they happen. I didn't have to be in charge of them. That was something I could be powerless over. And I was okay admitting powerlessness over what happened. And it was really clear to me that I was powerless over my disease. And I describe my disease, because I've had all these different assets, not enough, new, defects. I've had all these aspects of this disease. I have the overeating, I have the compulsive dieting, I have the bulimic exercising, and then I have just this mind that is just wired this way, so that even when it's not in that realm, I'm still doing all this stuff. My perfectionism, my judgment, my self-righteous indignation, and my anger, and all of my ego stuff, and all of that, that just makes my life shitty. Sorry. Progress, not perfection. I think for me where it started, I think the food came later, honestly. The food was what got me in here, right? Because my vanity was finally being attacked. So long as I was kind of thin, I didn't care how crazy I was. But when I was I spent the most amount of time being sick, chasing the high that came from thinness. That's my drug. Oh yeah, there it is, right? You lose some weight, maybe you lose a little more, and people look at you, and you feel powerful and validated, and you're on top of the world. There is no better high on this planet for me than the high with thinness. And I chased that dragon for my whole life. I have to catch myself, even today in recovery, even 8 years in, I have to remind myself, like, that is not my business today. That chasing that thinness never got me what I wanted. In fact, when I came in, I had to really admit that after all those years of chasing thinness, what I got was about 40 to 50 pounds overweight. That's what it resulted in. So that was humbling. That's how much I knew, you know? So it's taken me a long time to let the body do what the body's going to do. My recovery, I can see today in retrospect, although frustrating at the time, I can really see that my recovery had to come, because it's a three-pronged program, right? Physical, emotional, and spiritual. I think that my higher power was like, take that physical recovery and let's just put it over here for a while, because we're not going to touch that, because you've spent your whole life trying to get thin, and now that you're a little heavy, you're not suddenly going to get thin because you're going to A, bolt, you'll be done with LA, and B, you're not going to be any happier, and you know, you should have left because you wouldn't, nothing would have happened. So I think the physical recovery just sort of got moved away from me, and instead I got to focus on my emotional health and my spiritual recovery, and that seemed to be the right order for me, even though that's not the order that I wanted it to be. Definitely not. So, the emotional recovery at the beginning, I think I could sort of get behind. You know, I'm sort of trained at it to sort of think about our emotional life in a certain way. So I could sort of get behind that. And I knew coming in that my spiritual thing that I didn't know what to call, I knew that had a wound in it. And I guess that's really what I want to talk about today. It's November. It's the 11th month. It's the 11th step. This thing about seeking through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand God. This is like this tough part of this program, you know, because I came in with a lot of God wound. You know, that G word was a bad word. That word got used against me. That word got corrupted. That word came to mean a lot of things that I actually didn't fundamentally believe in. And I thought that meant I didn't believe in God. What I came to figure out for myself is that I just didn't believe in those concepts of God. And I have no idea what God is or isn't, and I don't care today. What I know is that when I develop a healthy relationship with a concept that I can palate, my life gets better. When I can start living with the uncertainty of that faith comes with, I can just say, okay, imaginary friend God, I feel like a lunatic talking to you, but can you help me out with this or that? And help comes. When I pray for serenity to accept the things I cannot change, it works. I don't know why. Does that mean that God, I don't know, and I don't care. I am not here to talk anybody into that God exists. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that my life gets better when I take these steps, you know. And these steps, when I came in, admitting my powerlessness, I have to imagine that felt somewhat of like a relief on some level. The principle of honesty certainly felt like a relief because I was lying to myself a lot and feeling very demoralized as a result. Like hiding food and like sneaking it in weird places. Like that just has a deleterious effect on my self-esteem, you know. So getting to be honest in here really worked. Becoming open-minded enough to like deal with this thing called God, you know, that really helped. And the principle of willingness, I think, really, really helped. I want to keep repeating that. That's as much as I know about this program. Honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. Done, right? So, you know, I think when I finally came in, it was the spiritual healing that was the missing piece, because I had been in a lot of therapy and I had been on a lot of diets, and those just weren't the right pieces. And when I started actually having to go back in my history and go, oh, that God stuff is so lame, I hate that, I started to remember all the times that I felt hurt and angry and frustrated, and I realized that that was what was associated with that word. And I got to like write about it, I got to talk about it in meetings, and I got to share it with others, and I was so blown away. But what I did not expect to happen, which was that I found that these rooms were the most like open, democratic place in the world where it's like I've ever been, where like no one tells you what to think about this thing that we don't know anything about. They just say, God as you understand God. Go forth. Figure it out. You know, whatever works for you. So I think that gave me this, like, the space to like make it okay to start up that relationship that I had when I was younger. You know, I grew up with some religion, which I ultimately found didn't work for me, let's put it that way. But there was this one part of religion that I liked, which was the part when all the BS stopped and you just got really quiet and you got to talk to God as you understood God from when you were like a five-year-old. And that relationship, which I think I was like embarrassed about, that relationship actually is funny. I think I sort of picked up where I left off, but then I was like, yeah, but now I have a five-year-old relationship with God. So it was also, again, another like round of like humility, but I think that's just where it started with me. I got to be quiet and say, kind of like, hello, God, are you there? It's me, Rini. I mean, that's kind of like where it started. And the weirder part was when God was like, hey, I know you. Where you been? Good to see you. You know, it turns out like my concept of God that had been really disturbed and distorted about like my badness because I'm gay or like my badness because I left religion or my, I don't know, all the, oh boy, whatever shameful thing that I found my way into, it was like, it turned out when I actually started talking with a God of my understanding, that wasn't my God's values at all. And I was sort of surprised at how like, I thought it was like to be a good girl meant to get like really tight. Like that was like my big part of being an OA was like I was really uptight. Because I thought that made me like together. And I was sort of surprised like God wasn't nearly as tightly wound as I was. And it concerned me because like how would things get done if we weren't managing it? And then it was like, by the way, I'm looking at this sign behind Monica. It's like, life is beautiful. Beautiful to keep looking at it. Because life is beautiful, right? And like I didn't make that happen. You know, that's something bigger than me that I don't understand. And so as much as I think I have to be really tight and manage everything, actually it's all going on all around me all the time. And all I get to do is just sort of like be a part of it. I can either be a part of the good in this world or I can choose not to be a part of the good in this world. Either way, my concept of a higher power is that I'm loved either way. But I'll tell you, my life, like where it matters, like at a very practical level, which is where I deal with spirituality, at a very practical level, like, my life just gets better when I choose to be part of the good on this planet. So like when someone asked me to speak, I was like, no, I'm not going to speak. No, I'm not going to. And I was like, sure, I'll be there. Sure. When should I be there? Where am I? You know, or, you know, I was visiting family recently, and family can be tough. I'm not the first to figure that one out. I know this is recorded, so but, you know, family can be tough. I love them. But it's like everything in my head is like, they're wrong, this is bad, like, do something. And instead it's like, that's not my problem. That is someone else's problem. S-E-P. You know, that's someone else's problem. I don't have to deal with it. I was walking to my car today, and someone was walking their dog, and let their dog just poop on the sidewalk. And I was like, someone should control this. And it's like, it's not my problem. I don't have to control when people let their dog shit. You know, it's not my problem. I am not the one who needs to put... Oh, I did it again. So sorry. That was how I was going in the world. The symptom of, like, food and body was all I could really see. Like, all about, like, food and calories and body and exercise and managing and blah, blah, blah. I had no idea how I was being outside of it. When all that big ticket item stuff got listed pretty early on in program for me, just like all the big swings, like no more binging, right? We're not going to binge anymore. That's probably not good for you. And some of those binge foods, you probably don't ever have to have a relationship with them. So let's get rid of that. Like, that cute little form of bulimia that you had that you didn't know you have, where it's like, you know, you're undoing with exercise what you did with food. Yeah, that's called exercise bulimia, and we don't have to do that anymore. And all those years and years of dieting, you're done with that too. And that was my early abstinence, right? No binging, no dieting, no bulimia. Fair, right? Fair? So that got listed, and life started to change a lot. And then I got to see how truly nuts I am. Because there's a reason that I'm doing all that weird shit. That's not like, oh, I woke up today, I thought, what should I do? Be a lunatic, right? It's like, no, I was doing that for a reason. There was something that was like feedback I was getting, and I just didn't understand it. So once that was listed, I could sort of see, and it's like, oh, because I want to control every person I see, and their dog, and where they poop. That's what I want to do. I remember early on in recovery, I was painting one of the rooms in my house. Remember this? And I was, you know, you have to like put tape on the parts you don't want that thing. And so I'm ripping the tape, and I'm brand new in program, thinking, I'm not like those people still. Haha. So I'm like ripping tape, and I realize I'm ripping every single piece of tape in the most compulsive, obsessive manner. I'm like having to get the edges right. Each one has to be sort of like a similar length. And I'm trying to like paint the walls, but there can be no paint on the walls until we get the tape up, and we can't get the tape up because Rini's spinning in her head about the size and shape of each piece of tape. And I went, I might have a problem. You know, this isn't about food. You know, I came in here because the biggest symptom was about food and body. That was clear. That was kicking my butt. And every time I went up against it, I lost. And I was just sick and tired of losing. My ego couldn't take it anymore, which was good. My vanity couldn't take it anymore, which is good. I'm glad I had those defects in place because it meant at some point I would give up. And I did, roughly 8 years ago, almost to the day. So this time of year is always really weird for me because it reminds me of those times when I was so sick. It reminds me of that last round with food. It reminds me of like the darkest my life ever got. It reminds me of bottom, which at the time I would not have been grateful for. It's only with 8 years of retrospect that I think best thing ever happened to me. Where am I on time? Who's my timer?
20 minutes.
Left? I've been talking. There's still 20 minutes left? Goodness. Okay. How is that possible? Okay. The other thing that I thought when I got up here, I thought of all the things that were racing in my head, and my heart was racing because I was so nervous. And then when I got up to the microphone, I thought, why didn't I go to the bathroom first? That's all I can think of is like the F word and the bathroom, and I have nothing left of recovery to share. That's how my mind does not work for me, and that is why I need a higher power. Like, I just need to like take a minute and be like, all right, I've been working all day, my mind's kind of fried, like, hang on. My job is to be a channel of God's peace and try to bring a message of hope and recovery. That's it. I don't need you guys to learn my gospel or anything like that. Well, let me talk about more of the steps and how it works. So that's always been helpful for me, just to sort of like be walked through it, especially for the newcomers and in your first 30 days. You're so brave and awesome. So I came in, as I said, kicking and screaming. It took my therapist a couple of years to get me in, and I actually met my therapist at my first meeting because I would not go unless I was like attached to his arm. And it was a weird meeting. I didn't know anyone. The woman who was sharing was an older woman, so I didn't like visually recognize myself and her. And she was wearing a big crucifix around her neck, and she was talking about God. And I was like, I am so out of here. I don't know what is wrong with you people. And I went outside to go smoke my cigarettes because I was still like, you know, collar up, very guarded and smoking and just couldn't like sit still and had all this addict energy. And this older woman came up to me and she was so nice. I didn't like have nice grandparents in my life, so this was real unique experience, and she was so nice, and she was like, are you okay, honey? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. And I was like crying and smoking and like giggling, and I was just like had energy everywhere. And she was like, she's like, did you want to talk about it? And I was like, no, it's fine. I'm okay. Because like I couldn't ask for help. I had too much pride wrapped up in it. I just couldn't say anything. And I went back inside eventually, just in time, randomly. I still say randomly. By some force I don't understand, which I sometimes call random. By the power of random, I went back inside, and this woman was about to raise her hand to speak, and I thought, oh, there's my buddy. She's going to speak. I wonder what she's going to say. It turned out this very nice woman who was, like, worried and taking care of me had, like, just lost her husband, and she shared about the pain of her grief and what was going on in her life and how she was showing up for it with dignity and with serenity and honoring her feelings and honoring their love and their marriage. And I thought, I can't handle it if my fucking pants don't fit. And this woman is going through something I can't even imagine, and she's doing it with, like, this thing, I think they call it grace. I think it was because of that woman that I kept coming back. I thought, yeah, I think I'd like that. I think I want... to have grace in my life, that like when things happen, I want to be the kind of person who can handle them. And with my current skill set and my current little box of tools, it wasn't cutting it. Because when things would happen, I'd be like smoking or shoving something else in my mouth or thinking about dieting. Or when you were talking, I was thinking about me. Or when something bad happened, I'd have to like pretend to be okay and handle it and be very high functional. And then I'd have to go home and binge my brains out because I was overwhelmed by my feelings. So that was not real strengthening for me. I can see that today. And I can also see that that was a good part of step one, is I could just, without shame, just admit with clear seeing, obviously this is something I'm powerless over. Like, how obvious is that? It took me 26 or 27 years, but like, how clear is that? I love how step two was explained to me, coming to believe there's something bigger than us that can restore us to sanity. The way it was explained was about first coming, then coming to, and then coming to believe. And that was very true for me. I think if I had to come in here and like take the big compulsive overeater big bite of this program, like I like to take everything in life, just take it all in, I wouldn't have been able to. I had to really digest it slowly, little by little. First I had to just come, then I had to come to, kind of wake up, and then I had to, then I could come to believe. And when I finally took my third step and made a decision in my life, like, okay, I am like you people, and I do have this thing, and I don't really like it, but I get that I'm not in charge of it, so, okay, big air quotes, God, help a sister out, you know? And that was step three, and I remember I was trying to do my step two and three. I remember coming out of a Sunday morning meeting in West Hollywood, and I was talking with someone about all the God wound, you know, just like all that wound material, just like festering, unhealed wound that made me so angry and agnostic and atheistic and rageful. And I remember I was like talking, I would like do things like, I was working at a bar at the time to make some extra money. I remember like there was a pool table there, and so like sometimes after work I would like line up a shot, and I'd be like, okay, God, if you're really there, then I'll make the shot. And then like I'd make the shot, and I'd be like, that's ridiculous. And then that would happen, or like I'd crumple up some paper, I'd be like, there's that trash can. All right, if I make this shot. Because I'm not really a basketball player, I'm really not very good at pool. So it would make sense that like something bigger than me would take place, because I really probably couldn't get it in the basket. Like, those are not my skills in this life. So then I remember talking to a friend after a meeting, and I was telling her like all these weird things that were happening. Like, the balls were going in, like things were happening, like I didn't really get it. And then as we were talking about it, and my friend, she said, she goes, look, I don't know what to make of all that stuff. She's like, the thing is, you don't have to know either. But we just think, like, is it possible that it's not all on you? And I was like, it's possible. But it's not all on you. And then the weirdest thing happened, because I was like, I kind of had my tail between my legs at that point. I kind of had to surrender, you know? It made sense. And then this, like, I kid you not, it was sort of like a weird night, like today. It was just like, it was all cloudy and lousy out, and then all of a sudden there was this clearing in the clouds, and this, like, total light that came through, and I went, oh, stop it. Fine, just stop it with the, like, theatrics. I can't take it anymore. Fine, I'm willing to concede the possibility that I am not the most powerful force in the universe. Fine. And the theatrics, thank God, came to an end. Making a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself was one of the best gifts I ever gave myself. It was painful. It was hard. I didn't like it. But it was one of the best things I ever did for myself. When I got to turn that over in step five and admit to God and to myself and to another human being the exact nature of all of my resentments and fears and regrets and shame and all the crap I'd been holding on to, all the things that had been filling me, which is why I came in 50 pounds overweight, when I finally got to like let some of that go, I think that started to be like a shift for me. When I started to see my part, you know, that happens in step five, you start to see your part, you start to see like your defects of character. Man, that was good. I actually keep my defects of character nearby me at all times, A, by being human, and B, by having them in my phone. And they're just there. Like, they're not, it's not shameful anymore. Like, yeah, I'm self-centered. Yep, perfectionistic. Yeah, really negative and critical. Mm-hmm. Very self-righteous. Got a lot of indignation in me. I have a lot of self-pity. They're all just there. And now I just know them. And when they come into my life, I just say, hello, old friend. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I think, you know, I take the seventh step prayer, and I ask God, as I do not understand God, to replace them. That would allow me to be more useful, of more useful service on this earth. You know, and that seems like a pretty decent prayer. So, for example, like, my stubbornness, that was the thing that kept me from being in here. In the 12 steps in this program, we learned, like, stubbornness, if we transform it, can be transformed into, like, perseverance. And I think that was happening in my life. Like, what was once just, like, a big stubborn block, like, I will not go in there, and those people have the problem and not me, and all that, just closed-mindedness and stubbornness. I think that same perseverance is what kept getting me through the steps and keep coming back and whatever. When I got to make my list of people I wanted to make amends to, that was healing. When I got to make the amends, that was healing. Every step in this program has just helped me heal every, like, layer deeper and deeper, such that, you know, today, 8 years in, it's like, why do I keep coming back? Honestly, on most days, I don't think about food and body today, which is a lot of mental energy I get to use on other things. So my life keeps getting better and bigger, but that means that I have to keep growing in order to handle it. So I keep coming back because I keep needing to grow. Because what happens for me when I sort of stall out in my emotional, spiritual growth is I just start to get fat. That's what happens for me. My body will let me know when I need to grow by growing in the wrong way. And it's humbling every time. If I put on a couple extra pounds, that's what I now understand is my higher power, as I do not understand my higher power, way of saying, maybe you're having some feelings, and maybe there's something going on, and unless I ring the vanity bell, you're not going to hear me. So now I'm going to ring the vanity bell. And we have that agreement that I still need that. I have not yet agreed that I don't, that I've evolved so far that I don't need that, apparently. One day I hope to be that evolved. Not today. So, you know, I keep coming back because, you know, step 10, 11, and 12, I continue to take my personal inventory. I continue to admit when I'm wrong. I continue to be a seeker. I continue to try to pass on the freedom, like the peace and freedom that I get in this program to others who are still suffering. I cannot tell you how grateful I am that I hit bottom, that I found my way into these rooms, that I got to meet you guys. I have to build the community of recovering fellows around me to watch their lives get better. I mean, it talks about it in the big book, you know. It blows my mind, really. I mean, to watch people I love get better, and to, even though it's hard to give myself, like, that same credit, I know, like, that's also happening for me. And sometimes I get little bits of, like, oh, yeah, that is different. So, like, this last week I came back from visiting family, and I think I mentioned that there's some tough moments there, and what was weird was, like, I think it was because of the 11th step, you know, I think it's because of prayer and meditation that I could, like, pause and not react in a certain way. And today I still have access to my beautiful nieces, which I think if I had responded the way that my impulsivity and compulsivity would have wanted me to respond, I might not get a relationship with them. And instead I got to, like, pray about, you know, just help me through these weird moments and love my family. And we made it through the trip. It's a weird trip, but we made it through, and I didn't leave. I don't owe anybody any amends, which is always a win. Having done a lot of nights of amends, if I don't have to rack up any more, I'm happy. I don't owe anybody any amends. I didn't make a big mess. I didn't ruin any relationships, and I didn't eat over it, and I didn't beat myself up over it, and I wasn't perfectionistic and shaming about it, and I didn't yell at anybody else and, like, transfer it. I literally just, because of the 11th step, got to practice what I've learned in this program, which is how to breathe, how to pause, how to ask for help, and how to find my gratitude. You know, I think what got me over my big stubborn hump spiritually was someone shared with me early on that really the two most important prayers in this program, help me, help me, help me, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I thought, I can get behind that, you know. And I think that's just how I got through that trip, was I just kept saying help me, and the help kept coming. And then I kept saying thank you. And then more relief would come. And then I kept just strengthening that. And then it's like we got to make it through this trip. And, you know, my friends, that's not how my family operates. We are not peace seekers. We're not that evolved. We are serious intellectuals with lots of degrees, and we attack things with our minds. Like, that is what we do. And, and we're smarter than everybody else, right? All that kind of stuff. And we're right. And in here, I get to let go of being right, and I get to be happy. And that's a real miracle of this program. So thanks for letting me share. There's more time, so if anybody has questions, I'd love to be of service and answer them right hand.
What do you do today to work your program?
Good question. The question is, what do I do today to work my program? Well, most specifically, when someone calls me and says, can you lead, I say yes, even though every instinct in my body is to say no. That's a big one, contrary action. My first thought, usually, is not the most winning thought. I've learned, for me, it's very humbling, but my first thought is usually something about just like a reflex to like defend myself, because I think like the world's unsafe, and that's actually not true. So I usually gotta kind of pause. I feel like hitting the pause button has been a huge tool in my life. I am without a sponsor right now. I want to get clean about that. My sponsor and I separated a few months back. So I've been without a sponsor, which has been a little weird. What that's made me do is it's made me call more fellows, make more outreach calls, take more service positions. So I have a service position at one meeting and a regular at another one, and I say, yeah, this kind of stuff. I meditate every day. I pray almost every day. I do a lot of writing. The tool of writing, oh, my God, in this program, lifesaver. You know, I got on a plane to go to Portland, and every time I get on the plane, I take my little stupid journal, and I think, oh, tools of this program are so annoying, but I take it out and I write out like all of my expectations and my fantasy version of how it's going to be to see my family and all the unicorns and beauty we're all going to have, and I get really clear about my fantasy, and then I get really clear on how to get like life on life terms so I can go in at the right level, because I'm always expecting, that's one of my top defects of character, is I just have these ungodly, but they're just these hugely irrational expectations of the world constantly that I'm up against. So getting to kind of get clean about that is really helpful. And I have five or six sponsees who I speak to on a regular basis. I have a community that I've built by doing uncomfortable things like saying to people after meetings, hey, do you want to go grab dinner? And then having to like look at a menu with other compulsive eaters present and not isolate with food, but actually like, let people into that process. That was healing. I still do that today. Basically, I think it's like these like little things in my life, like just like a little thing, like saying, like writing on a post-it, like speaking tonight at meeting and just folding it up and putting it in what I call the God box and being able to like turn that over, you know, that's helpful. And also, I mean, the 11-step prayer is really good because it means, like, I'm just here to be of service. So every day, I would say today, life is much more just about, like, help me be of service, make me a channel of your peace. And that's how I work my program, is just to know, like, it's not my job to be, like, thin. It's not my job to be liked. It's my job to be of service on this earth. And that will determine the quality of my life, which is very different than my upbringing teaches me. I think it's about being thin. So, like, to actually have, like, some substance behind that feels a lot better. How much time from the point the vanity bell gets rung to when I, like, surrender?
Yeah.
Depends how much pain I want to be in. You know? I think I used to have a much higher pain threshold. I just don't have it today. So, if I, today, you know, 8 years, I'll tell you, like, today, 8 years, feels like once those pants get tight, I go, oh, time to start getting honest about my food. Let me make sure I'm committing my food and getting honest and clear about it, and I'm accountable for every bite that I take, because I like to sneak and lie. So not that long these days. But the good news is, like, that's the improvement. I mean, there was a time where I just had to stay that way for a long time because that was what I needed, you know. But I've learned in this program it is not my job to suffer needlessly. I thought that was, like, a virtue. That's what I grew up with, you know. It's valuable to be a martyr. And now it's like, this is suffering that is needless. There is a solution to this problem, and it is called Overeaters Anonymous. So I get my butt back right in, and it fixes. Yeah, for me. Thank you for letting me share.